Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll check in with the Army Corps of Engineers from Afghanistan, and we'll learn about the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs claims with their senior claims representative. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
Students across Minnesota have started their spring semester of college. A good handful of them are members of the Minnesota National Guard who are using state and federal assistance as well as the GI Bill to pay for their higher education. Of the three, the Minnesota State Tuition Reimbursement is something unique, exclusively for members of the Minnesota National Guard. It allows our soldiers and airmen in good standing with their unit to be reimbursed up to 100% of the undergraduate rate of the University of Minnesota Twin City campus. The State Tuition Program is a fantastic benefit for our soldiers and airmen, as well as the Minnesota National Guard. About 20% of our current members are in college. I encourage highly motivated listeners interested in learning about how to obtain college tuition reimbursement to check into the Minnesota National Guard. To get connected with a recruiter in your community, visit online or call 1-800-GO-GUARD.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is Colonel Michael Price, Commander, U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, Transatlantic Afghanistan District, and previously the Commander of the St. Paul District of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers here in the Twin Cities. Colonel Price, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Well, hey, it's my pleasure. I had a great time on your show in the last year, and I miss the great state of Minnesota, too.
Colonel, you've had a nice long career and did a great job here in the Twin Cities, but you had kind of a rough assignment the last year. You had to go over to Afghanistan and combine a couple of districts.
Yeah, we started out with two districts doing a lot of work over in Afghanistan, building infrastructure for the Afghan National Security Forces. And last year they made a decision to take those two districts down to one. So we closed the doors on two of them, and I stood up the third, and I basically combined both of them into one. This is a challenge of itself, but I left a lot of great people from the Corps of Engineers that just didn't skip the beat and went back after that great mission we had over there.
Sir, as I recall, when you called in from Afghanistan last time, you had about 450 projects going over there.
Yeah, we started out with just around 400, and I'll tell you what, in 1 year, we were able to turn over about 180 of those projects, which was probably the best year the Corps had in Afghanistan over 12 years. So I was pretty proud of all of our federal workforce that just got after it and delivered lots of great projects for the security forces.
Now, Colonel, can you explain to us, you had some service members working with you, but you also had some Afghans working for you as well.
Yeah, I guess that's one of our legacy programs in Afghanistan is about almost 8 years ago, the Corps didn't have enough people to come over there and work, plus the security situation. So we hired about 300 Afghans that were degreed engineers and then essentially brought them onto our program, and they did everything that we would do as part of the Corps. And when we leave there, that workforce will be there to be our biggest legacy. So they were out there looking at projects every day where we couldn't get to them because of either the security or the transportation network that had been degraded. We relied on our Afghan quality assurance representatives to oversee construction and to be our eyes and ears and report on how well all the contractors were doing in delivering our projects. So, again, that's one of the things I'm most proud of is that workforce. And some of those members started with us, and then they decided they could go out on their own. And one man in particular started his own business, and now he's doing international construction, both for the Corps and for other nations in the region. So that tells you how well these guys are eager to get after work, and it's all about building capacity for Afghanistan. And I think this is one of our key points as we start leaving, to leave that kind of capacity remaining in Afghanistan.
Colonel, would that mean that part of your goals when we've hired these local Afghans to help build these projects was to put them in a position where they could understand and maintain those facilities going forward?
Oh, absolutely. And I guess, one other point is the Corps has pretty high standards for our construction and that the Afghans really weren't aware of on some of our construction practices. So these Afghan quality assurance programs are going to be able to take our quality standards and apply them to their own construction in their country, which they're going to build for their people.
So I would assume that those standards would mean that a lot of those projects would stand for quite a bit longer time-wise than maybe some of the previous construction?
Yes, and one other point that they don't have a very high program for is construction materials. So part of our goal was to apply some of those lessons from the international building codes regarding construction materials. Because in the past, their buildings didn't last very long. Most of the region's an earthquake zone. So a lot of buildings fall apart and crack due to just simply Mother Nature. And by using better quality standards of materials and practices, we think we're going to leave much better products for the Afghans in the future.
We're speaking with Colonel Michael Price, who just finished up a tour as commander of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers Transatlantic Afghanistan District on Minnesota Military Radio. Colonel, Afghanistan's quite a country, and I would assume you've been all over that country. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about the geographic obstacles and problems?
That's one thing people need to get in their heads is the vast landscape that Afghanistan offers. And it's kind of going to Texas and Colorado and Arizona, that region of our country, but without a road network. So they have one road that basically goes around the country, and to go from one tip to the next, it's days rather than hours that we would be having. So that's one thing that is makes it tough to do anything over there, is getting from point A to point B. And then, even the secondary roads are dirt, gravel, that modern automobiles have a rough time going over. But it is a very beautiful country. There's vast mountains with deep valleys and natural rivers running through it. And the people there truly want us to be there. They value what the Americans have brought to their country over the last 12 years. And many of the ones I've talked to said nothing but thanks about what the Americans and the coalition have been able to do to bring them out of the Stone Age in some regards, in some parts of the country, to increase their literacy rate, their life expectancy, all those kinds of things, just by us being there, along with everything else we've done for the security of Afghanistan.
And Colonel, during the course of that year, I imagine you experienced hot weather all the way up to snow in the mountains and all kinds of weather conditions, rain, snow, dust, everything.
Well, I tell you, it's nothing like Minnesota. So the winter there, we did get some snow, and having spent 3 years in Minnesota, my blood got a little thick. So over the course of the year, I don't think I put a pair of gloves or a jacket on because that good Minnesota weather helped thicken in my blood and get me prepared for a cool winter. But up in the mountains, they get lots and lots of snow. And one place in particular, the Salong Pass, which is their main artery from Kabul, which is the capital, up to the northern regions of the country. There's basically one path to there, and the Salong Tunnel was one of our major projects that we got completed just before winter set in. So that was another great success for the district.
A little more challenging to build things in changing geography and changing weather and being out in a vast country like that, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And to get materials from one point to the next on single arteries makes it challenging. Even more challenging when there's bad guys shooting at our contractors, which happen occasionally, but not very often, unfortunately, for our workforce.
Colonel, we have to take a short break. We'll be right back with more from Colonel Michael Price, Commander, U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, Transatlantic Afghanistan District. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and we've been speaking with Colonel Michael J. Price, Commander, U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, Transatlantic Afghanistan District, who just finished up a year over there. And actually, Colonel, I'm still referring you as commander of that, but there was a change of command ceremony on June 27th.
Yes, there was, and it was kind of a bittersweet change. I really enjoyed my time over there. And one thing that I think I left you with last time when I was at the commander of St. Paul's, the workforce that I had working for me was and St. Paul I thought was the best around. And what I found when I got over in Afghanistan is the same thing. The Corps of Engineers have great people working for them, a bunch of very fine professionals. And the ones that go overseas to do that mission are top-notch. They want to be there because mainly they believe in the mission that we undertook over there 12 years ago. So I'm pretty proud of being part of that the last year, part of history for Afghanistan and for our country as well.
And Colonel, you were able to clear a lot of projects in your year there. How much work did you leave behind for the new commander, Colonel Hemlinger?
Well, Colonel Hemlinger is going to have about 130 projects remaining, and then the real problem there is the ones that are left are the hard ones. They're all the mainly a lot of the institutional bills, like the schoolhouses and those sorts of things. But he's got a good size workload, and he's got the right workforce to have there to help finish the program.
Colonel, I'm looking at an article from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers from late last year, and it says, building in Afghanistan is not like building in suburban America. It's not simply a matter of choosing countertops and carpet over coffee with the general contractor. Transatlantic Afghanistan District and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers primarily agent to accomplish the building mission there. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers mission in Afghanistan has some of the most challenging dynamics and obstacles of any construction environment across the globe. First, from finding contractors who can demonstrate the ability to perform the work in a contingency conflict zone is difficult, and in addition, there is not a skilled workforce readily available in Afghanistan, and the pipeline for materials and supplies is long and difficult to navigate. You had an uphill year, didn't you, sir?
Yeah, it was pretty tough, and that just scratches the itch. Not only those things you mentioned, but also some of the places where we're building. You know, we're building bases for the Afghan National Army and police, and they put those things in places where the bad guys tried to traverse so that they could put the security forces in the right spot. So building in those types of regions made it even more difficult. And then the relationship between the United States and Pakistan and Afghanistan and Pakistan made it kind of tough to get materials across the border sometimes, which only delayed material to get out of the project site, which, of course, delays project delivery.
Sir, did you have a good security contingent so that your people were well protected?
My workforce was always secure. Didn't have any issues for ourselves getting around the battlefield. If we didn't get there, we didn't go. But some of my Afghan workforce were put at risk, and we understood that. Because we asked them to go places, and then when they represented the U.S. government, that put themselves at some great risk. The other thing that caused us some problems was as the coalition started shrinking, retrograding, in accordance with the administration's plan, the regions that we could get to also shrank. So there were some projects that weren't completed where we had to rely on our Afghan call assurance, where we would rather have gone out there, we couldn't get there out there anymore. So that was also one of our more challenging things, is to accept the fact that we were relying on Afghan call assurance only to deliver quality projects for our customer.
Colonel, what would you say was the most difficult project to complete during the year you were there?
Well, that's a loaded question because they're all difficult. We ended up finishing was the Presidential Information Communication Center. It was probably the most challenging because of the security at the presidential palace. So we're basically building a building at the White House, is a good analogy. So everything had to go through their security program. All the workers had to be cleared every day. All the materials brought onto the site had to be brought in by a very small truck every day. So that made it very difficult to finish that project on time. It was a rather small project, inexpensive, but it had lots of scrutiny from President Karzai's staff because they were in their backyard, so they could walk by it every day and make some observations that we always couldn't make.
Well,
that was challenging but fun because when we finished that project, it was one of our mainstay projects. The core finished for the government of Afghanistan. Beautiful building. The presidential staff was all there at the ribbon cutting. General Dunford, the ISAF commander, was at the ribbon cutting, and it was really a signature project for the coalition to complete right before the runoff election.
Colonel, I'm visualizing President Karzai giving you change orders every other day.
Well, it wasn't him. It was his architect, which is unique. So, but we managed, and again, we had great partnership between the contractor, the Corps, and our customer, which was basically General Dunford.
We're speaking with Colonel Michael Price, just finished a tour as commander of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers Transatlantic Afghanistan District on Minnesota Military Radio. Colonel, we don't see a whole lot about Afghanistan and our troops and what's going on in the papers each day, but I want to ask you, you've just spent a year there completing a lot of projects. Do the Afghan people, do they appreciate what we've done? Have we accomplished some good things there?
Well, Tom, I think we've accomplished some great things over there, and I'm a little partial because I've been there four times, and I've seen change every time I go back, and I've befriended an Afghan general, and every time I saw him, he was just over-thankful for everything the U.S. has done for his country, and he's been fighting this war, or the previous war, for decades, lost eight members of his family through the conflict, and he's still out there fighting the enemy every day. But he reminded me why we were there. It's because of him and the people he's leading that truly want a secure country. And we have made lots and lots of progress. We held the Afghans held two elections. They had the primary election in March, and the Afghan National Security Forces secured the entire country's election with no coalition support. And then the re-election that happened in June also was secured by the Afghan National Security Forces without U.S. support. So that in itself is a huge, huge difference in Afghanistan. They essentially built their security forces in 8 or 9 years. Over the last 12. And so to do that for a nation is phenomenal when you feel back and look at what the U.S. and the coalition partners have been able to do in Afghanistan. And the Afghan people understand that. The girls are going to school now. The economy's grown dramatically. So all in all, I think Afghanistan's got a very bright future.
Colonel, we've just got about a minute left. What does the future hold for Colonel Michael Price? Where's your next assignment, sir?
Well, it's funny you ask. I'm actually packing up the trailer now and getting ready to head out to Washington, D.C. To work somewhere in the Pentagon. Fortunately, they haven't told me what I'll be doing yet. They just told me to show up, and hopefully I won't be sweeping floors and making coffee, and we'll see how that goes. But looks like mid-August I'll show up, and hopefully by then they'll give me a position. But I'm looking forward to it, work somewhere on the Army staff and taking what I've learned over the last several years, both at St. Paul and in Afghanistan, up to the Army level.
Sir, we've enjoyed talking to you when you were here commanding the St. Paul District, and appreciate your calling in from Afghanistan and again today, and hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to you in the future from the Pentagon.
Sounds great, Tom. And again, I appreciate everything you do for all your listeners to bring our stories out to the American people. And people need to understand how much that helps both the military and you. And appreciate all you've done for us.
Colonel, thanks for joining us again today.
Thanks,
Tom. That was Colonel Michael Price, the commander of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers Transatlantic Afghanistan District, joining us once again on Minnesota Military Radio.
You're listening to the Minnesota Military Radio Network. Stay tuned for more and follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to learn about the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs claims process. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shalito.
The 2015 legislative session kicked off earlier this month, and let me tell you, it's been busy around the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Last session was termed the unsession. Lots of work was done to clean up dated laws. This work led to a leaner and more efficient government. We thank all those involved in the process of their leadership and commitment to improving the lives of veterans and their families. Relationships on both sides of the aisle continue as we work together to better serve our nation's heroes. As a country, and as a state, we have made certain commitments to our veterans. It's important that we keep good on those promises. To stay in the know on federal and state legislative updates, visit MinnesotaVeteran.org.
Thank you, Commissioner Shalito. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. The United States government has set aside benefits to honor your service. You've earned them. Filing a claim for benefits can give you access to VA health care, financial assistance, rehabilitation, and much more. And joining me now to talk about this topic is Brian McLaughlin, Senior Claims Representative with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Brian, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
Brian, let's start off. You had a career in the Army.
Yes, sir. I served in the Army for over 20 years.
And you finished as a CW3, Chief Warrant Officer?
Yes, sir. I was a CW3 when I retired, yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. And in those 20 years... What were some of the highlights?
I initially joined the Army as a military policeman. My first 3 years were as an MP. I then joined military intelligence. I was trained and for 17 years was a special agent in U.S. Army intelligence. I worked as an investigator with U.S. Army intelligence for 17 years.
So you had a pretty good career.
It was an enjoyable career. It depends on who you ask. My wife... she might not say that, look back on it with the same fondness that I do, but yeah, it was an enjoyable career.
And Brian, how long have you been with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs?
I started with MDVA as a claims representative in March of 2010, so it's coming up on 5 years.
How did you come about that position and in that type of work?
I have, since I retired, from the time I retired, I wanted to work with veterans, and I attempted on two prior occasions to come with the state, and my third time, I actually, through an association with my supervisor, he actually was instrumental in bringing me through the process and ultimately to become a claims representative.
Now, Brian, you work with veterans from all over the state, but can you tell us what is all involved in being the senior claims representative for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs?
Well, yes. My primary job as a claims representative, whether it be claims representative or claims rep senior, is to assist veterans and their families in obtaining VA benefits. As a senior claims rep, we have the additional responsibility based on our time doing the job of providing additional training to the other claims representatives that work in our office. I also provide training for county veterans service officers. We do a three-stage training process for CVSOs as well, and I'm involved in that training too.
Now, Brian, we've had quite a few county veteran service officers and a tribal veteran service officer on the show, and seems like they're going to training for something all the time, but then they're responsible to know where all of the resources are to help our veterans with any issue, aren't they?
Most definitely, and they are a tremendous asset to veterans. We, in the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, have a very good relationship with the County Veterans Service officers, and it is through working with them, we are best able, I believe, it's a good program, and we are very much able to assist the veterans in the individual counties within the state.
Now, Brian, my generation, the Vietnam veterans, when we got out of the service, some of us didn't want anything to do with the service for a while, and we just put our heads down and went to school and got married and got a job, and at some point or other, something came back, and a health issue while we were in the service kind of bit us a little bit, and sometimes we have to search around and find our discharge certificate. But I know you have some advice for those that are getting out of the service right now.
And it is critical that any veteran who has gotten out of the military or is in the process now of leaving service, that they have copies of their DD-214, primarily copy 4, but you want to have your copy. And once you do receive it and it's your time to leave service, at your first opportunity, take that, your original DD-214, to your county veteran service officer. The county veteran service officer will provide you with multiple copies and go ahead and start you into the process towards service-connected disability claims.
So when they get out of the service, take your DD-214, go have a visit with your county veteran service officer. Even if you don't need anything now, you may need something later and your family may need something later. So if you get registered, they've got copies.
You want to make sure that you have your, and you can get the, but at a minimum, you want to ensure that you have a copy do you have the original and that you have multiple copies made. They are invaluable to a lot of the work that you're going to be doing in pursuing other jobs as well as looking at service connection too.
Now, Brian, for those service members that are still in the service and maybe coming up on separation or they're getting out or they're going to retire soon, how important is it to have that final physical examination and good medical records?
Now, I was, before we came on today, I was telling you the story that in my own situation, I learned the hard way. And it is extremely critical. What you want to ensure is that every physical situation, every physical malady, every condition that you have, that you are somewhere down the line or upon leaving service going to claim as a service-connected disability, ensure that it is documented in your service treatment records. And if not having any prior entry in your service treatment records, ensure that it is documented in your retirement physical. That way, hopefully, that documentation will provide the in-service event necessary as one of the three elements required for the VA requires for service connection on a direct basis. The VA wants you to establish the in-service event, a current diagnosed condition, and a nexus link. And having that documentation while you're in service and maintaining a copy of your service treatment records will assist you in filing those claims.
We're speaking with Brian McLaughlin, Senior Claims Representative for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs on Minnesota Military Radio. So, Brian, it's very important to keep all of your documentation, your discharge certificates, your copy of your final physical, anything that might have happened during your service, because if something comes up and you need to prove that it's service-related, you've got to have that documentation.
The VA is going to ask of you, when you file a claim for disability, that you establish an in-service event. The easiest way to do that is in documentation contained in your service treatment records, that you were treated for hypertension, that you were treated for a knee condition, that you have this issue relative to your hearing and so forth. That documentation will, again, set up and be the initial push toward proper or a more timely grant for service connection. It's not impossible to do it without that information, but it becomes more problematic. Having that documentation there and knowing it is there makes your claim that much easier to accomplish.
So, Brian, correct me if I'm wrong, but if we have veterans out in the state of Minnesota and they have any kind of an issue, they should go visit their county veteran service officer and they can initiate a claim. And then once that claim is in process, if they need someone to advocate for them or help them with the claim, they could either go to the claims support from the Minnesota DAV or from the American Legion or the VFW, or they could come to you.
Exactly. We always try to get veterans and the county veteran service officers throughout the state of Minnesota that are incredible in their assistance to veterans. They do a tremendous job. Many of them are experienced. Many of them have been doing the job for a long time, and that's the first stop for a veteran. A veteran goes to the county veteran service officer. In the process of doing that initial filing of the claim, the veteran will establish a power of attorney, a limited power of attorney, for the purposes of having representation to the VA. And that's where we come in, because Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and through an agreement with the American Legion, we also rep claims through the American Legion. We would become the veteran's power of attorney, and the county veteran service officer would file the claim. We would then support the veteran in the process of advocating for the veteran to the VA in support of that claim.
Brian, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I'd like to just walk through a sample of the process of starting and filing a claim, and so we can show our listeners how that works. We're speaking with Brian McLaughlin, Senior Claims Representative from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been visiting today with Brian McLaughlin, Senior Claims Representative from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now, Brian, I've heard from veterans, and you've probably heard this over and over again, it's just too tough to process a claim. It's never going to happen anyway. Why should I waste my time?
Yes, sir. And I know a lot of veterans that have expressed that to me. It's too difficult. It's not worth it. But oftentimes that's born of just a lack of knowledge of the process. And many times that same veteran, at the end of having worked with us for a period of time, will turn around and say, "I'm glad I did that." So, yeah, you can get past that. There are many times when the veteran's going to say that this is a difficult process, and they get frustrated by it. Oftentimes, it's a frustration of a perception of what the VA is going to do, and through our assistance, we can get past, we can overcome some of those frustrations.
Now, Brian, I'm a Vietnam veteran. If I come to you, I'm a Vietnam veteran. I served in Vietnam. All of a sudden, I've got type 2 diabetes, and I want to process a claim. Where do we start, and how does it work?
Well, like I say, initially, we would encourage you to go to see your county veteran service officer and initiate the claim there. Now, we can, at the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, take your claim, certainly. But what we would want to talk about is an entire claim. If you were, as you were, obviously, a Vietnam veteran, the issue of diabetes, as we would look at your DD-214 and we would discover, you, in your case, that you had boots on the ground service. Diabetes mellitus type 2 is a presumptive for veterans with boots on the ground. That claim, that specific issue would be relatively easy, but we would look at additional issues. Did you have any other physical situations, any physical conditions that happened to you while you were in the military? And we would go through an interview, and oftentimes veterans don't recall or don't think about things. Maybe in your case, the diabetes becomes the overriding situation for you. Now, and we'd ask basic questions. Were you ever injured in the military? Did you receive treatment? Did you ever have any overnight stays in a hospital or medical facility while you were in the military? We would try to gain a full gamut of potential claimed issues. We would have you fill out specific paperwork there, and then we would file your paperwork for you after accepting you as, or you accepting us, filing paperwork that would identify us as your power of attorney. Then we would file paperwork for you with the VA itself. And we are located in the federal building, and the VA region, St. Paul VA regional office does occupy the upper floors of the same building.
And Brian, how long are claims taking these days?
The claims process, it varies by field, by VA regional office. I believe that the St. Paul VA regional office, to be truthful, the VA regional office in St. Paul is one of the top VA regional offices in the United States. Their turnaround time for claims is under 100 days as a general rule. Now, there are different categories of claims. Now, the claim you're talking about, we would very probably file that claim as a fully developed claim, and the development process for a fully developed claim is substantially abbreviated. Other claims take additional time, so we would look at that.
So depending on the type of claim, that's going to determine how long it's going to take and how probable it is it'll be approved. Now, you mentioned presumptives. And what that means for our listeners is, depending on the theater of combat that you were in, there were certain diseases that were common among those folks. And one of the things that was common in Vietnam was because of exposure to Agent Orange, it's presumed that that might have caused the type 2 diabetes.
Yes, sir.
And so you've got the military's, it's got a whole database full of what happened in certain places, and they know what to expect.
Exactly. And if a veteran perceives that they have a presumptive and they were in areas where the presumption is granted, it is a very easy claim to process. So that claim is relatively easy to do.
Brian, we just got about a minute left. Is there any final thoughts you want to give our listeners on filing claims and how to go about the process?
Well, in closing, I would encourage veterans that perceive this process to be complicated or difficult to, if they believe that they have a service-connected disability, they should understand that it is an entitlement that they have merited based on their service. And they should come to us or come to the County Veterans Service Office and pursue that claim. We are extremely thankful for veterans. We are grateful for the veterans that we serve. We are all veterans who work as claims reps with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and we look forward to serving veterans. It is a passion. It is a joy to deal with veterans on a daily basis.
So as we said earlier, if you served in the United States military and you have some type of disability or some type of a problem, the United States government has set aside benefits to honor your service, and you've earned them. So go visit your county veteran service officer. They'll tell you what's possible and what isn't possible, and you're there to help process those claims after they're
most definitely. And we look forward to working with veterans.
Brian, thanks for visiting with us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
Sir, it's been my pleasure. Thank you.
This is Brian McLaughlin, the Senior Claims Representative from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Joining me now from the flag line of the Minnesota Patriot Guard is Tim Leonard. Tim, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Well, thank you, Tom.
How's the Patriot Guard and how's the Patriot Guard riders doing this year?
They're doing just fine. They're just weathering the cold weather and getting on into the missions and
suffering through the winter in their cages.
Yes, it is. Yes, they are.
It'll just be a few months, and you can get those motor scooters out again, Tim.
Yes, we are. We're waiting on that.
How many members are you up to now?
About 5,200 across Minnesota.
And Minnesota is divided up into different areas?
We have 20 sectors in Minnesota, and each sector has a group of leadership that organizes all the missions and takes the reins to that mission and gets the people out there and gets all the contact information, does all the work up front, and so our members can go up there and hold a flag line of silence.
Now, you told me before we went on the air that you had an interesting mission recently. We lost a 62-year-old veteran.
Well, yes, we did. You know, and it was very interesting that we always go there for the families to show honor, dignity, respect for the fallen hero. You know, even though he's a veteran, he's still a fallen hero. And one of the things I noticed at this one was, it's not just the family that we're there for. It's the community, too. There were so many people that walked by and saluted, and even the local fire department stopped by with a couple of thermoses of coffee for the members that were standing in the flag line on that really warm day last week. It was like 3 above.
Oh, nice warm winter day.
Well, yeah, it was. You know, the day before, I think it was 10 below.
Oh, well, you had a good day then, Tim. How many riders were there that day?
Actually, we had 6 members there lining the sidewalk, and it was very interesting. You had people that were walking into the funeral and thanking us for being there, and we were trying to thank them for, you know, their loved one for what they did, and it's kind of like a thank you argument between everybody because we know what that person has done for us and why we're there.
We've talked about that before. It's a very emotional thing, and it's a very patriotic and honorable thing to, as you say, honor, respect, and dignity for the departed veteran.
Yes, it is.
Tim, this is a little early to start talking about it, but every year you have a Patriot ride, and this year it's going to be a little different.
This year we're moving the venue. We're moving from Ham Lake, which is, they did a wonderful job helping us and making us do what you know, making us able to do what we needed to. This year, we're going to move it to the Anoka Airport. It gives us a huge venue. The airport tarmac is going to be open. We're going to park all our motorcycles on the tarmac instead of having four or five different parking lots where everybody's parking in. So between that and we'll probably be able to have 3-4 times as many vendors there, a lot more family-oriented stuff going on.
How many riders did you have at last year's Patriot ride?
Well, last year we got almost a rain out. We only had about 1,500.
I think a few years ago when I was up there, it was quite a bit more than that.
Yeah,
it was
about 3,000 to 3,500.
And I think you told me that year that by the time the first ones had left got to the destination, the last ones were just leaving.
They were. I figured we had a motorcycle line 17 miles long.
So this year that's going to be on June 20th.
Yep.
And we'll have you on the show a month or so before so we can talk about all the details.
Yep.
And it's a fun event for the whole family to come up and watch it. And if you haven't seen a couple thousand motorcycles going all at the same time, you've got something to see.
It is.
Tim, who's eligible to be a Patriot Guard rider?
Anyone.
And what do they need?
3x5 flag, transportation to get there, and knowing that honor, dignity, and respect is what we owe our military.
So anybody that wants to join, all they have to go is go to your website?
Go to our website, mnpatriotguard.org. And over on the left side, there's a little button there that says join us. Puts you on an email list that lets us email you what's going on around the state.
And then just show up and volunteer and dress appropriately and participate in this great event.
Yes.
Tim, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you.
That's Tim Leonhardt from the flag line of the Minnesota Patriot Guard. We have a couple of mentions today. Taya Kyle, widow of American sniper Chris Kyle, will serve as the next Heroes Among Us series speaker on Saturday, February 8th at 7 p.m. at the Bethel Synagogue in St. Louis Park. Taya will offer her take on the spirit of service, as well as the challenges facing veterans, first responders, and their families. A portion of the proceeds of this event will underwrite Bethel's Minnesota National Guard Support Initiative, directly benefiting the 34th Combat Aviation Brigade, the 2nd Battalion, 147th Assault Helicopter Battalion, and the 204th Area Support Medical Company. For more information, visit our Facebook page or go to BESYN.org/American Sniper. And secondly, on our mentions, I got an email this week from Chuck Haas from the Hugo Yellow Ribbon Network. And he says, I continue to be delighted and motivated by all of the creative ways people devise to show support of our troops. CBS News ran a story on Dog Tag Bakery, run by a Jesuit priest in cooperation with Georgetown University. It helps disabled veterans learn how to operate a small business. He thought of Minnesota Military Radio when they revealed the motto for Dog Tag Bakery, Bake a Difference. They have an online order business for their cookies and brownies. Proceeds support their missions. One of their packages comes with a sign that read, Real heroes don't wear capes. They wear dog tags. We're just about out of time. If you have a mailbag question or suggestion for a topic you'd like us to address, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com and click on Contact Us to send us a note. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Colonel Michael Price, Brian McLaughlin, Tim Leonhardt, Commissioner Larry Shelato of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we hear the story of the immortal chaplains of World War II and learn about Project Patriot from General Mills. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.